And welcome to Make Audio. I'm Philip Turin, Associate Editor of Make Magazine. And for the next half an hour or so, we're going to be talking with Gordon Kruberg and Craig Hughes from Gumsticks. Gumsticks are the smallest commercially available Linux computers on the planet. These are tiny, hence the name Gumsticks. These are built on open standards and open source software. So if you've recently heard about the swarming Bluetooth helicopter robots, that's where they come from. So we talk about all things small and open source, and also Gordon tells us about a new line of products that they're introducing. So if you're into building robotics, this is definitely the show for you. So let's go. All right, I'm here with Gordon Kruberg from Gumstick. Gordon, you there?
I am here. First, what I wanted to do is just quickly give you a background on how and why I started Gumsticks in the first place, and then my involvement with Craig Hughes, who took us on what I'd say is a pretty significantly positive detour that I've enjoyed doing. Back in 2000, I made a decision that after I wrapped up with one particular company I was working with, that I wanted to do nothing but robotics going forward. I decided then that it looked as though the robotics community was evolving in a way that was really similar to what had been going on in the personal computer market back when Apple Computer got started. Mm-hmm. A lot of, the old homebrew computing was being remodeled into the robotics clubs that you see around the country, and they continue to grow. The amount of robots that are built from scratch is huge these days, especially if you look at competitions like the FIRST competition and others on how schools compete against each other in the robotics field and what people are doing from scratch.
Right.
What I really thought was going to help the robotics community more than anything else was a way that they could collaborate, providing a way that they could collaborate on building and not having to start from scratch every time they built a robot, but to build on each other's successes. And the way, or the best model I had seen for that, was the way that Linux community had evolved and the open source software movement had evolved, where a lot of work gets done and shared in a really great collaborative environment. I had a chance to meet a fellow named Craig Hughes, who was a project manager on a pretty successful open source project called Span Assassin, and he and I worked together on commercializing that. And that was the one detour I took from deciding to do robotics to doing Gumsticks. Mm-hmm. Gumsticks was founded to build a really small, really powerful, really truly open source platform for doing robotics. I ended up working with Intel and the PXA255 as the selected platform, mostly because of its, for two key reasons. One, its size, and two, its the level to which it already supported the Linux or ARM Linux kernels. Mm-hmm. I ended up spending a lot of time doing the first real hardware engineering work on it, and did the first Linux port to the Gumsticks itself. At that time, Craig was involved in Network Associates, and he ended up leaving and joining me shortly afterwards to do two things. One is actually to make the Linux environment on the Gumsticks, that's the whole build root and development environment, robust and shareable and actually useful to the entire community instead of, what I had been doing, which is, one man's project in a garage. And the other thing he pointed out was that there is huge value in a really small, portable, open platform. The opportunity to develop applications that are networked on, network appliances, basically,
yeah.
Really tiny networked platforms that were open source instead of closed. And so, with Craig's input, Gumsticks took a pretty big and important detour. Expansion into supporting not just the robotics community, but supporting mobile platforms, whether they're robotics or not, and whether they're actually tethered or not. in the open source environment.
So I was going to say, so tell me, before you continue, tell me some of the advantages of the open systems versus some of the other ways that people are developing robotics and small systems and using proprietary software. What are the advantages?
I'd say Craig is extremely familiar with all the alternatives, and I'll just turn it over to him to go over some of the benefits of open source in particular.
My motivation really in wanting to work with the Gumsticks is that I tinker with things, as probably, you know, all of your readers do.
And
I've been frustrated for a really long time with not being able to program my cell phone not being able to program my PDA in the way that I want to without having to download some kind of development environment and SDK that maybe you have to pay a lot of money for even, just to be able to write a piece of software that runs on a computer that I already own, so that I can take that thing around with me and do whatever I want with it, whether it be, something on my cell phone that automatically monitors environment looking for other Bluetooth devices and then does something to them when they show up, whatever little tiny application that I might want to put on a device and carry around in my pocket. It just wasn't very easy to do that in a rich development environment in a general purpose kind of way that would allow me to do all the stuff I wanted to do. The Gumsticks was attractive because it was open in that I knew Gordon, and so I could get all the information from him. But when I started working with Gordon, he really had a C compiler. I think actually the only place that the C compiler for the Gumsticks would build was on his laptop. I tried copying the tree. Bit copy the entire directory tree to several other machines, and it wouldn't compile anywhere else. So that kind of limited the development paths on the Gumsticks. It's the only place you could compile code with Gordon's computer. So I went in and basically cleaned that up and tried to create an environment that would make it be really easy for people to be able to either develop their own applications from scratch or take an existing application that runs on an x86 Linux machine, just drop it into this environment, hit the compile button, and have it spit out something that will run on a Gumstick. So that involves everything from rewriting the bootloader and rewriting a bunch of the hardware-specific patches to the Linux kernel through restructuring the development environment in a pretty big way that makes it much easier to do kind of drop-in development. The benefits of having the open development system that we have are really primarily accessibility for guys like me who just want to write some software and don't want to have to click through 17 licensing agreements and put $1,500 on the table to download an SDK.
Right.
And then have to learn the SDK and then, even then not really be able to write the software that you want to for the device that you have. Anybody who knows how to write any kind of software on a Linux x86 desktop computer can write the same program on a Gumstick. Obviously, there are limitations with the hardware on a Gumstick that, unless you hook up an LCD screen to it, you can't have a graphical UI. Unless you connect a mouse to it, a serial mouse or something, you can't really use a mouse input. But with the hardware that you have available, oftentimes a console interface or a web server-based interface to the device sitting on the network or sitting on a Bluetooth personal area network or however you want to connect the Gumsticks to the outside world, you can write any kind of Linux application and have it run on a Gumstick. And that's a very powerful and flexible platform that I haven't found anywhere else before.
So tell me, Gordon can chime back in or whatever, tell me about some of the commercial applications that you guys have sold or developed or work with others, and some of the independent ones. Like, I know a lot of people are probably listening to this because I'm going to post up links to the swarming computers. That was a big one where everyone was talking about. They really liked this idea of these little tiny computers that were Bluetooth enabled that could kind of swarm and fly around. But what are some of the commercial applications that you guys have out there and some of the other ones?
So let's break it into I'll let Craig go into some of the network devices that are being created, specifically where people have got an application running on an x86 box, and they want it on a really tiny platform that they could put anywhere. And Craig can go over a couple of those. Some of the commercial ones, I guess it's also fair to say that those are the largest commercial opportunities. Where we see this being used is where it's as a network device. Where we see it actually a lot of development on the platform is in the university robotics, university, robotics environment. We have, at last count, it was 80-something universities that were using this in their either computer science or robotics or embedded systems departments, where they were teaching a course on it or using it as a teaching tool. And they end up doing things not just like the swarm robots, but we've got several universities who are working on, swarm aerial robots, but there's several universities who are working on swarm ground robots. There's something called the Flockbot out of George Mason. There's some cool work being done up at Simon Fraser University in Canada, where they are looking at this whole question of, the overlay from the Linux world is, what does a robotic Beowulf cluster look like? Not just aerial, but on the ground. So that's a set of interesting academic work in robotics, where each of those guys has their own list of robotic applications for this. Again, in the embedded community, you can take anything that is currently being done in the embedded environment and say, well, instead of being limited by a 40 megahertz processor, what happens if you've got 400 megahertz in an open development environment? What level can you take this to? Questions like, well, what happens when you do have a reasonably good real-time kernel the way the 2.6 is. What can you do at 400 megahertz instead of, 40 or 4 megahertz? Those are the kinds of questions that people are asking and answering with our platform on in the physical world as opposed to the network world, which I'll let Craig jump into.
I guess over on the network side, what people typically use GovSticks for, and this includes both hobbyists and commercial entities, is I think there are two primary categories of applications. One is a situation where you have some kind of sensor that you want to monitor, whether it be a temperature measuring device or a GPS unit or an RFID sensor or a switch or a button or any kind of sensor that you can think of, really, that has a fairly simple interface, either a serial interface or it's either on or off. Those types of sensors, a lot of the time you want to do some small amount of processing on the input from that sensor and then upload the data somewhere. A small amount of processing might be, collect half an hour's worth of data before uploading so you can send the data more effectively or more efficiently. It might be multiply by 9/5 and add 32. It might be a whole range of different sort of minimal types of things. Maybe you want to collect a sample value and then look it up in a database and then upload whatever the results of the database lookup is. Putting a GovSticks in the middle, basically between the sensor and the network, is really pretty trivial to do. You wire the sensor in, do your processing and then send the data over to Hour. Yeah, so we've had an example of that. We have a commercial customer who's building a time and attendance device, like a, you know, the old-fashioned time clock where you punch in and punch out.
Right.
They have a device that has a sensor in it that reads your access card that you use to get into the building. When you come into the building and select your access card, it reads the information off of, I believe it's an RFID-based system, records who you were, what time you showed up by looking at the clock on the gun sticks, logs that locally, and they actually are recording that information onto an MMC card that can then be removed and taken for auditing purposes. But they also use the network to upload that data to their database. Very easy to do. They hooked up a serial RFID meter to the gun sticks, which you can query and get responses over a serial interface. Wrote a little piece of code that fetches the data from the RFID sensor, processes it, and then makes a network call to go send it over to Ethernet.
Tell me about, so with the flying web servers, is that similar to what you're just talking about? I mean, same type of things. They just have this data coming in, and there's processing on board, and they're communicating to each other, and then also to a server. Is that pretty much the same thing going on?
I'm not sure exactly how much software they're running on the helicopter itself, as opposed to running on a ground station. I'm sure that they are doing a reasonable amount, because obviously you want, you know, fairly low latency on the feedback of that thing. So the helicopter doesn't flip upside down and crash.
Mm-hmm.
Doing avionics control stuff on the helicopter, you want to be able to respond fairly quickly to any changes in the sensors. So that would be an example of that type of application, I guess, where there's a lot of stuff that's happening locally with the sensors feeding back to the motor controllers and that kind of thing to keep the helicopter airborne. And then occasionally data also gets sent over the network back to the ground station or wherever the data is going to report on, you know, stuff like the position of the helicopter in 3D space,
right?
Or you know, what the remaining fuel level is and that kind of stuff.
It seems like with your system, you've got all of the software that could be potentially written for x86, and you can run simulators on servers. You can run just about all the code that you need, and eventually just put it on the actual physical devices, and you don't have to have, like you were saying before, you know, 8 different SDKs, 8 different licensing plans, you know, 8 different everything just to use your equipment. So I suspect that, you know, these type of projects might flourish because of the way that you can deploy.
Yeah, that's right. And actually, you know, a really good example of that is what I call the second category of systems, where rather than sensor connected to network, you have basically a bump in the wire where you have a dual Ethernet device on a gum stick, you know, a gum stick with 2 Ethernet ports, where you have a wire coming in, the data goes in, the gum stick is monitoring the traffic that's coming in on that port and then relaying it or filtering it to the second port.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a whole range of applications there where you can, you know, modify the data that's going through, you can do firewall stuff, you can massage the data any way you want to, you can analyze the data, you can log stuff, you can, you know, whatever you want to do. You know, there are a lot of those types of applications that are already written today for x86 that people are using an x86 box in a rack or wherever they're using it.
Yeah.
Kind of monitoring. But a lot of those applications you can just take and directly recompile from the gun sticks. You know, they're already tested and whatever on the x86 platform, you just recompile it from the gun sticks and it just works.
So this is a question for both of you. Either one can answer. So tell me about the products that you have for sale for our robot building listeners and tinkerers and people who actually build these things. What does it cost to get them started, and what do you got?
Well, so we should probably talk about the RoboSticks, which is just being announced tomorrow officially, but it's been, again, it's a good example of what you can do in the open source community, because the whole thing was designed completely out in the open by the open source community. And we just did a lot of feedback from people who are on the mailing list to say, do this, do this, do this, and came out with a few iterations, culminating in this product we call the RoboSticks board. It's an Atmega 128 board, the daughter card to the GumSticks. And
also can run standalone.
But it can run standalone, and it's just a by comparison to the GumSticks, it's small and cheap. Basically, but it's got a whole bunch of headers on it, which provide for GPIO interrupts, PWM for motor control, A to D's, that gives a robotics developer or somebody who's working in electromechanical systems the opportunity to build something and test it, frankly, pretty cheaply. And then it can also be connected directly to a GumSticks, using the GumSticks as its CPU. This is really a daughter. The RoboSticks board is a daughter card to the GumSticks that provides a lot of electromechanical level signal processing. The GumSticks is the general Linux platform. I mean, I think that if you look at the kind of the compute numbers, the difference is clear. The GumSticks is a 400 or 200 megahertz processor with 64 meg of RAM and 4 to 16 meg of flash and enough to boot regular Linux and bring up a full runtime environment and user space and secure. The Atmega has got honestly, I can't even remember the amount of K of RAM, and it's got a small amount of flash that allows it to store and run something at 16 megahertz. The real value of the board is considered a low-level sub-processor board that handles all the direct electromechanical I.O.
So essentially, if you want to build a robot that has a sensor that can tell when the robot has collided with a wall, and you want to have some simple program on there that says if you collide with the wall, then back up, turn right, and go forward, you can do that with RoboSticks. If you want to have that combined with, say, computer vision, then you need more processing power, and you need something to be able that you can hook your camera up to and that sort of thing. And then you can just piggyback a GumSticks on the RoboSticks, get all that extra computing power, and be able to do whatever application you want to on there in a Linux environment.
Wow. So it's almost like Legos, where you're putting these blocks of hardware together, and then you've got the open source software and community behind it. So you're going to be announcing these shortly. How much will they be going for?
$49. So that's exactly the design model, giving people enough building blocks that they can do stuff by themselves. The RoboSticks is a $49 product. The GumSticks, the lowest end product, is a 200 megahertz processor with 64 meg of RAM and 4 meg of flash, which is enough to bring up Linux. And in fact, it's enough to bring up Linux and have all the drivers you want to put on a card that carries a CF card to do 802.11b. So you conceivably connect a RoboSticks to a GumSticks to a what we call CF sticks, and then you've got a compact flash. Then plug in an 802.11b or an 802.11g card, and what you've done is put together something for. Right, so the CF card is a CF sticks is a $25 product. I think you can buy 802.11b cards for, off the top of my head, $50. So that does that work out to $150 for $225? You've built a robotic platform that is 802.11 that's on 802.11b with a complete Linux set of drivers and development tools.
On it.
Yeah.
Wow.
So the reason we chose the Atmega is that there is already an open source community around a much tinier set of development tools. I mean, a set of development tools built around a much tinier processor. And there's an open source community around this, around something called Player, which is a development platform for autonomous robots that tries to munge data into a standard format, again, to have an open source community built on this concept of developing and sharing tools with everyone. That's Robustics. Now, we've also got another board coming out, which we've not priced yet. It will be likely in the $25 range, which is a breakout board, which provides all the GPIO that's available directly from the GUMSticks at a it just breaks out all the headers in a way that you can sit down and solder them, or you can put headers onto them yourself and play with them in a way that you're not going to screw up the GUMSticks, which is the motherboard. And I expect to be announcing that in the next week.
That's great. And so for all this information and for folks who want to check this out, obviously is gumstick.com the best place, GUMSTIX.com? Is that the place to go?
Gumstick.com is good, and then there's also our all of our documentation is actually on a wiki that's fully user-editable, and there's a lot of stuff there. So gumstick.org/TIKI. TIKI is where our wiki is, and there's a whole bunch of information there. You know, probably about half of it from us, and half of it from our users and customers. About you know how to use it, what they're using it for, crazy ideas that people have had, etc.
For more information about Make Magazine, the show notes, and to subscribe to Make Magazine, visit makezine.com.